Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the clock is ticking for the federal government to avoid a shutdown tonight as lawmakers race to finalize a massive spending deal. Senate leaders in the White House struck a last-minute agreement after weeks of tense negotiations. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar talks this morning with Representative Josh Riley of New York's 19th District about where the funding package stands and how the escalating Minneapolis immigration enforcement is reverberating beyond Minnesota. Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government for his weekly check-in and more local government up close. Colchester's new town supervisor joins us to talk about town meetings, county government, and why he's inviting residents to the table. Plus the latest Curtain Call episode, our theater podcast, after this hour's news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. Independent journalist Don Lemon has been arrested by federal agents in Los Angeles. His attorney is calling it an unprecedented attack on the First Amendment. The former CNN anchor has said he was covering a recent protest inside of a church against the government's immigration enforcement tactics in Minneapolis. The pastor there is an ICE official. NPR's David Folkenflik reports.
What we do know is that the DOJ twice sought to get arrest warrants for Lemon in Minnesota, was turned down by a magistrate and then by the appeals court there. But, you know, Bondi says, you know, in confirming this arrest, she called him part of a coordinated attack on City's church in St. Paul, Minnesota, and promised more details soon.
It's unclear what the charges are. Lemon's attorney says Lemon will fight them vigorously. Stocks opened lower this morning after President Trump announced plans to nominate Kevin Warsh as the next chairman of the Federal Reserve. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow fell about 110 points in early trading.
Kevin Warsh has experience at the Federal Reserve, having served on the central bank's governing board during the Bush and Obama administrations. Back then, Warsh was considered a hawk, with a worried eye on inflationary pressures, even when unemployment neared 10%. Still, Trump is counting on Warsh to bring lower interest rates. If confirmed by the Senate, Warsh would replace Jerome Powell, whose term as Fed chairman ends in May. Wholesale inflation in December was higher than expected. The Labor Department says wholesale prices rose 0.5% during the month and were up 3% for the year. Asian stocks were mixed overnight, up in Seoul, but down in Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Tokyo. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Senate Democrats and President Trump have reached some agreement on what to do for now about funding the government ahead of tonight's shutdown deadline. But it appears there will still probably be a short-term funding lapse through at least the weekend or until lawmakers vote. The spending deal separates funding for agencies like Health and Human Services and Defense from funding for the Department of Homeland Security. Venezuela is making major changes to its oil industry. Its Congress approved a bill last night that will enable foreign companies to operate the nation's oil wells. Manuel Rueda has more.
After the U.S. raid that led to Nicolas Maduro's removal, the socialist government's control of Venezuela's vast oil reserves is changing. The bill approved on Thursday night will allow foreign companies to run oil wells in Venezuela and sell the nation's oil, provided they pay taxes. Disputes with the government can now be settled by international arbitration. Previously, the Venezuelan government had to be the main stakeholder in oil projects, and the National Oil Company was the only entity allowed to sell the nation's crude. Now, the U.S. Treasury has eased sanctions on Venezuela, and American companies will be able to purchase and resell Venezuelan oil.
Manuel Rueda reporting. This is NPR News. SpaceX is said to be looking at a merger with another company Elon Musk founded, xAI, potentially setting them up to launch data centers in space. NPR's Emily Fang reports that one of China's biggest aerospace companies also says it's looking at building data centers in space.
China Aerospace Science and Technology Corporation is a massive state-owned company that develops everything from satellites to space rockets. It says it's going to focus on space-based digital infrastructure, building up power-intensive computing and data centers floating in outer space to support artificial intelligence demands back on Earth. China and the U.S. are the primary competitors in space exploration, and according to Bloomberg, Musk's SpaceX wants to launch solar-powered AI data centers within the next 2 to 3 years. Under its current 5-year economic plan, China is also pouring resources into developing commercial uses for space, including a goal to launch its first commercial spaceflight by 2028. Emily Fang, NPR News.
Lindsey Vonn's status for the upcoming Winter Olympic Games is unclear. The American alpine skier crashed down in a downhill race in Switzerland today. She lost control when landing a jump and got tangled in safety nets. Vonn was able to get up and slowly ski to the finish line before being airlifted for medical evaluation. Her first scheduled games are February 8th. She made a big comeback last season after several years away from ski racing. She is 41. Another winter storm is about to hit parts of the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic with heavy snow and wind. I'm Kristen Wright, and this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. As you heard on NPR News, the clock is ticking for the federal government to avoid a government shutdown tonight. Yesterday, Senate leaders reached a deal with the White House on a massive spending package after Democrats pushed for reforms to ICE following national outrage over the deaths of Alex Pretty and Renee Good. Both were U.S. citizens killed by federal ICE agents. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar spoke to New York's 19th Congressional District Representative Josh Riley this morning about where the federal package is and the impact Minneapolis's escalating immigration raids are having locally.
Things have been moving very quickly, even just in the last, 24 hours. It's being reported that Senate Democrats have struck a deal with President Trump on this federal spending package. What is the latest on this set of spending bills, and what is creating this crunch in the first place?
Well, the deal that came over from the Senate last night, I'm going to review it in detail today, but my understanding is that it will allow for funding of all of the government except for the Department of Homeland Security, which funds ICE. And that part of the government will get basically a two-week extension so that all the parties can try to work out a deal to reform what's happening with our immigration system. And that's really the crux of this. And the main thing is what we've seen in Minneapolis over the last couple of weeks is just shows what I've been saying all along, which is that our immigration system is just so completely broken in this country. I was very, very critical of the Biden administration because I thought they were too weak on border security. I'm now holding the Trump administration accountable because I think they're acting unconstitutionally and recklessly. And so the essence of this is this government funding situation. We have a deal on basically 11 out of 12 parts of the federal government, and there's going to be a two-week extension to try to work out reforms on the immigration component.
Last week, you voted no on the spending bill as is to fund DHS as President Trump. We're seeing ramps up these immigration enforcement activities, not only in Minneapolis, but also throughout the country. You described on social media the administration's ICE operations as, quote, out of control. What kind of local impact do you think these fatal killings of Renee Good and Alex Pretty by ICE agents are having on your constituents locally?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think there's a lot of fear, and under very much understandably so. I think it's just really important to, and I think everybody knows this, but the vast majority of immigrants in our community are hardworking, law-abiding folks who are paying their taxes and contributing to our communities. And I think there's a huge amount of fear amongst that population based on what we've been seeing. At the same time, I've always said, and I believe if you're here unlawfully and you're committing crimes, then you need to be removed. But the way to do that is through the responsible law enforcement and through constitutional means. And so, I sat down with a bunch of folks from law enforcement over the last couple of days, asked them for advice and counsel on all of this. And, they reminded me, around here, the way our law enforcement works, it's the trust of the community is the single most important thing. And our law enforcement around here spends so much time engaging with the community, becoming part of the community. And that's just not what we're seeing in Minnesota with agents wearing masks, the shootings we've seen. The thing that I've just been like carrying with me is this story about this 6-month-old baby who was tear gassed. I mean, my God, in America, that's just not who we are. We need to see these reforms.
There is a risk of a partial government shutdown if the package isn't passed by, you know, today at 11:59 p.m. How exactly would a shutdown affect New Yorkers?
Well, I think in this case, my understanding of the deal that got passed last night, and again, I have to look at it in detail today, is that we will be able to avoid, or we at least should be able to avoid a shutdown. So most of the government has already been funded through budget agreements that we reached a month ago or more, including one that was really, really important for our community that I made a top priority is funding the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development to make sure SNAP and nutrition assistance, for example, are available. As of last night, my understanding is there's 12 parts of the federal budget. And as of last night, my understanding is that there's agreement on 11. And so, and that last one, that 12th one, will just get a 2-week extension to sort it out. So my hope is that we will not be in a government shutdown situation here.
And the massive spendings package still needs to pass in the House. How likely do you think that would happen with the changes that we heard yesterday?
Yeah, so that's right. So, so there's like 5 or 6 pieces of this, and I think the vast majority of it is actually widely bipartisan and non-controversial. And my hope, my expectation, what I'm going to be pushing for is for those things that we can agree on and that have broad bipartisan support, let's get those done. And then let's focus on the debate that we need to have over immigration reform. That package that is widely bipartisan and really I hope we're able to get done includes one of my top priorities over the last year was providing funding for bulletproof vests for our local law enforcement. That provision is in there, and I really want to see that get across the finish line. I was also able to secure funding, a few $100,000 for some affordable housing in the Catskills. One particular historic preservation project in Pine Hill that I'm really excited about. So I'm hoping we're able to get everything done that we agree on, and then we have some time to sort out our differences on the immigration component of it.
Also, another thing happening today, people are calling for a national general strike. No school, no work or shopping. And this is, according to organizers, to protest the nationwide immigration raids and to stop ICE funding. Do you have any thoughts on the strike and the message that you think it might send?
Well, I think, I know we're actually getting my son ready for school now, but, right. I do understand, and I've heard the sentiment. I mean, there's just a lot of outrage, rightfully, and fear and concern about the way, ICE has been operating. And, you know, look, this is just one of those things where you turn on the TV and you see images of Americans being shot in the streets. You read about this story about this 6-month-old baby who got tear gassed. You hear these stories about law enforcement operating without warrants. And I don't see this as a political thing. It's just not who we are as Americans. It's just not who we are. And so people are doing what we've done for centuries in this country and stand up and protest and make their voices heard. And I think that's really important. And I think it's having an impact as we've now seen all the parties forced to the table to have a real serious grown-up conversation about what immigration enforcement should look like.
We've been chatting with Representative Josh Riley on the latest on the federal spending bill and the local impact what we're seeing in Minneapolis is having at a local level. Representative, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, happy to do it. Always loved chatting with you and looking forward to next time.
And thank you to Kimberly Izar for that report, just recorded this morning. And now joined by Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, good. I just wanted to follow up on the government shutdown situation. You know, the latest is the Senate hasn't voted on their reforms. If they do change any part of this bill, it has to go back to the House, as they discussed. It seems as if, according to the Speaker, Johnson, they're not going to be back in session until Monday. So there might be a short shutdown is what he's calling it, I suppose. Does mm-hmm. that impact anything at a local level if there's just a few days of this no. government shutdown?
We don't anticipate it to. Almost all of our federal funding is funneled through the state. And the state, at least in short term, always makes sure that they cover things that might not be coming through on the federal level. It really becomes worrisome if a shutdown were to last longer than a month.
Which we talked about last fall when
yes,
that happened.
We did.
We saw a lot of impacts there from mm-hmm. SNAP to all kinds of different programs. So we hope that Congress will act and not impact us locally this time again with such a long shutdown.
All those Congress people listening.
If you're listening. Yeah. Just do something. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking about legislature, but there was no legislative meeting this week. There's some other stuff going on, though. That was by design. It was not on the calendar.
Right. It wasn't. It wasn't. I think everyone was caught up with listening to Elon Musk's data centers in space. it was that I just heard that a few minutes ago. I was like, data centers in space? That sounds both absurd and fascinating at the same time. I'm just thinking of these giant factories, you know, all ugly and blocky, just circling the earth. I don't know. Is that
sucking
a dystopian
all the information
future?
Out of us,
right.
Yes. But again, the meetings will resume next Thursday.
Yes, next after. Thursday. We will not be talking about data centers in space
no.
that I'm aware of. I don't think Sullivan County has any plans that way, but I don't know. This may become a recurring gag for you and me on here because this has struck my funny bone.
You heard that and couldn't get off of it. Let's talk about, though, warming centers. Of course, the frigid weather we have been having. We still have a cold advisory in effect for the region. Mm-hmm. Let's remind folks about those warming centers, if anybody needs them at any time.
Well, I had at my house yesterday morning minus 21 degrees. That was without the wind chill.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it that low before. It might be colder than in space.
Yeah.
We are very intent at the county about making sure that people have warm, safe shelter. We work on that daily. Our Department of Social Services folks are daily engaged in making sure that people have the shelter that they need. And so while we do have homeless people in the area, we make every effort to accommodate them. Of course, they have to be willing to work with us on that as well. But 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. every night, our warming shelters are open. No questions asked. Come right in, and we will provide you with a warm bed, maybe even some food or drink. I've heard happens from time to time by the wonderful volunteers at the Liberty United Methodist Church on North Main Street in Liberty. That's one location. And the other is the St. John Episcopal Church on St. John Street in Monticello with their church members. And also there, the Federation for the Homeless is involved as well. Now, people have asked me, well, what happens at 8 a.m.? It could still be well below zero at 8 a.m. Well, if we know that people are going to be going back out into a situation where they're going to be cold or otherwise in harm's way, something unsafe, we're going to be working with them to put them in emergency shelter where they can stay for the whole day, not just these overnights at these warming shelters. And so our social services folks are ready, eager, and willing to help on that. We just need to make sure that the folks who we're helping are ready, willing, and eager to let us help them.
And also, we talk about folks who are unhoused who might need that assistance, but it's open to anyone who might have a situation where they are lacking heat.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have run out of fuel, come to the warming centers. We'll keep you warm. And if that fuel outage is going to last longer, we'll find emergency shelter for you. We'll also work with you if we can through the Home Energy Assistance Program, the HEAP program. There are so many ways that we can provide for people's basic needs, shelter, food, heat. You just need to get in touch with us either at the warming centers or give us a call at Social Services, 845-292-0100. That's 292-0100. And talk to somebody there. We will get you the help that you need.
Tonight's forecast is expected to be 8 below. Mm-hmm. This cold advisory, as we said, continues through Sunday. And it's been such a long stretch of really frigid temperatures. Is this putting a strain on the warming centers or anybody at that level, you know, assisting folks?
Not a strain. No. We've been welcoming a lot of people. I think the other night we had close to 24 people in our Monticello warming center. It's the thing that we do. We want to help this way. There are a lot of people, including me, who go to bed at night in a warm house who think about the people who might not be as fortunate. And I'm not a direct volunteer, but I'm promoting it out there. I want to be part of that team that thinks like that. It's like, how can we help those people who are out in the snow and the cold and have no other place to turn except to us? We want to be there for them.
Jen, this is a good time to remind folks that cold advisory remains in effect until 9 a.m. Sunday. We could see dangerously cold wind chills as low as 15 to 25 below zero. Now, that can cause frostbite on exposed skin in as little as 30 minutes. Very cold temperatures can also lead to hypothermia with prolonged exposure. If you are going out, wear appropriate clothing, a hat and gloves. Be sure also to keep your pets inside. And we will, I've never been more happy to hear that it's going to be 26
right.
on Monday than I have yes. been this yes. last week. That's our warming trend that's coming. But take caution if you're going to be outside. The weather is impacting some events too. This snow NW event, is that still happening?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good.
That's what we want to have. We want the snow. We need the cold, not maybe necessarily as cold as it is today or the past few days. But yeah, snow NW, which is a what's the word? A portmanteau of snow and O and
fancy,
aren't I? O and W Railway, the New York Ontario and Western Railway, which went defunct many decades ago. But there are rail trails all around Sullivan County that were former O&W rail beds. And we will be hiking along one with snowshoes, snow boots, all that good stuff in the Bashakill Valley near Wurtsboro. We will be gathering at 10 a.m. on Sunday at the Mamikating Environmental Education Center, which is a cool destination in and of itself. But then they'll be taking you out along the rail trail, which is flat and level. It'll be snow covered, but you won't be trudging up or down hills. And along the frozen Bashakill Wildlife Management Area, which is one of the most special areas in the state. It is a massive swamp or bog, but that makes it sound unattractive. It is full of wildlife. It is one of the most biodiverse places in the state. If you have never been there, you need to go. If you have, this is a great time maybe to see it in a time of year where a lot less people actually visit, but there is still wildlife going on. Not everything is hibernating.
I think it's portmanteau.
What'd I say?
Two.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. I can spell it. Can you spell? Oh, you got it in front of you. I'm not going to ask you to do that.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to our portmanteau from the Sullivan County government, Jillian Hoost, who joins us every Friday. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with more, including, I think it's bubbling up to people now about this DMV closure.
I've been hearing
a lot more about this.
Let's just remind
folks about that right after this. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week we have adventures in tea with Henrietta Lavelle, who supplies the world's best restaurants. And we have the brilliant scientist cook Nick Sharma with great cooking tips for home cooks you've probably never heard before. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill, here with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. Now, we've talked about this, but I think it's finally settling in with a few folks. There's going to be a statewide, New York statewide DMV closure coming up soon, and that's because they're updating their technology,
yes.
and it's impacting everyone, but I think people are getting a little scared about it.
Well, it is one of those things we look at with trepidation. It's like, well, I hope everything goes well, because this is going to be, in essence, a DMV blackout for several days, because starting Friday the 13th, I'm sorry.
Who chose that?
Friday the 13th, all state DMV offices, every DMV office in the state will close. They will not be open. Some of them may be open for the first half of the day. I think they have that. But by the end of the day, all of them are going to be closed, and they're going to remain closed through the entirety of Tuesday, which is, what is that, the 17th?
That's the holiday weekend. Yeah. It's the President's Day weekend. So I guess that's why they chose that.
Right. Monday is President's Day, so all government offices would be closed anyway.
Right. So 17th Tuesday.
So Wednesday the 18th, they'll reopen. But not only will the DMV offices be closed, the online system will not be available to process transactions, and no phones will be answered either. I assume their website will still be up if you just want to check on, you know, how do I renew a license, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're looking to actually talk to somebody or conduct business with DMV, no dice those days. Now, with our local Sullivan County DMV, we're actually closed a day before and a day after all of that. So we will actually be closed starting Thursday, February 12th, because that's Lincoln's birthday, and county employees get that off. So all county offices will be closed. And then Friday the 13th, while the rest of the county offices will be open, the DMV at Sullivan County will continue to be closed. Obviously not open on the weekends. As we said, Monday is President's Day. All government offices are closed. Tuesday, all DMV offices will continue to be closed, including Sullivan County, but our government offices will be open. Wednesday, most DMV offices, if everything goes according to plan, and that's a big if, most DMV offices will be open, but Sullivan County DMV office will be closed that Wednesday. We will be reopening Thursday the 19th. So to sum it up with Sullivan County, we will be closed from Thursday the 12th of February through Wednesday the 18th of February. Could extend that if,
depending on how this goes,
if things don't go well. And the reason we're closed a day longer is that the county clerk, Russell Reeves, wants his staff to be able to get up to speed on the new technology that is being installed.
It's a new system.
It's a whole new system, computer system.
It's not just an update.
Which is why the online processing part's going down as well. So hopefully everything transfers over. The state is working with a vendor that has done this in 20 other states. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that everything goes as it should. And then when people come back into Sullivan County's offices that Thursday, that it won't be a difference for them. Everything will happen smoothly, maybe even faster. Who knows?
Ooh, faster at the DMV.
Yeah, we'll see.
From your mouth. All right. Let's talk about what's happening at the Sullivan County Museum. We had a little preview of this yesterday. It looks as if the County Museum is going paw to paw. Is that what it is? With Puxatawny Phil?
Actually, we're going to the dogs.
Puxatawny Phil, of course, makes those predictions in Pennsylvania about, you know, winter weather on Groundhog's Day. But Sullivan County Museum has decided to throw down the gauntlet here and have its own prognosticator.
The Frederick Cook Society and the Historical Society, both of which are housed in the County Museum, are putting this together to celebrate the spirit of Groundhog Day, but with a non-groundhog. It'll be that dog named Gidget. And if anyone knows, that is the dog that is part of Jonathan Charles Fox's family. But I would imagine more people know about Gidget than Jonathan. No offense, Jonathan.
Jonathan, a columnist and a reporter at the River Reporter.
At the River Reporter, yes. And he brings his dog, Gidget, everywhere he goes. And she is going to be the star attraction on Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, February 1st at the County Museum in Hurleyville. It's a free event where she is going to predict how much more winter we're going to get. And I'll be interested to see if she can outdo the groundhog Punxsutawney Phil on this. So if she is, we may have a going thing here.
I think so.
Also beyond that, though, since that shouldn't take up too much time, and this is an event that runs from 2 to 4 p.m., we will also be hosting some very talented local musicians there, the Americana duo Mike and Ann Baglione, the guitarist David Dan.
Oh, we know him.
Who I believe you know here at JFF.
Yes,
and the bass player Jay Brooks, who I know as a very accomplished artist, a painter. And then, of course, Little Sparrow, which is Aldo and Carol Troiani, who will be hosting the whole thing. So it's going to be a wonderful thing. Hot drinks, refreshments will be served at the County Museum. A fun way, especially if you don't want to do the outdoor event, Snow and W, on Sunday. This is an all indoor event, and the County Museum is heated, and we will just have a wonderful, rollickingly good time there. And if you haven't met Gidget, you'll get to meet her. She is a treat.
Puppy. So you have a puppy. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some other things going on. The planning department hosted a great seminar on package plants. What are the package plants?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention this because this is something the planning division does fairly often. But unless you're a town official or a village official, you don't necessarily know that we're doing this. Especially if you're on like a planning or a zoning board or even on a town board, you need continuing education credits to maintain your spot on those boards if you're a code official as well. And so our planning division offers these ways to get those credits and to learn more about important things right here on site. And this week in our hearing room, we entertained over 30 local officials to tell them about the pros, the cons, the advantages, the potential pitfalls of package plants, which are prefabricated small-scale water or sewer treatment plants. They put them with developments, you know, a housing development, rather than maybe tying into a municipal system because a municipal system doesn't exist in that location. They create this mini system, which is called a package plant. And they have some advantages to them, obviously quick to put up. They have some cost advantages. They can be effective. But if they are not installed correctly, if they are not maintained correctly, they can become sources of pollutants. So that was why it was important for our local officials, especially the decision makers, on where development is going in the county, to understand what's going on. And we are going to continue to offer seminars like this throughout the year.
Also, a clothing drive continuing for folks to contribute.
Our Child Advocacy Center clothing drive started on the 26th of January. It goes through the 6th of February. We are collecting clothes for kids of all ages, from 0 to 18, of all genders. And we just want it to be clean. We don't have a washer or dryer on premises. All you have to do is drop it off at our Child Advocacy Center, which is part of our public health building at 50 Community Lane in Liberty, anytime between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. during our normal business hours there. This Child Advocacy Center works with all our local children, from those who are in foster care and adoptive to those who are going through the court system to those who are dealing with having been abused. And some of them come from very poor families or backgrounds where they don't have anything. They need clothes. So if you have kids' clothes that you want to get rid of, we will happily take them from you.
And a sure sign that it will get warmer soon, we can announce that lifeguard courses will begin in March.
Yep. That's something I wanted just to mention because it's like, wow, getting back in the water and it's not a polar plunge kind of thing. So, yes, especially for our young people who are maybe looking for a job this summer, lifeguarding. We always need lifeguards. Some of our towns need lifeguards as well. The Cartwright Water Park needs lifeguards. Whatever you want to do, whether it's public or private, you can make some money this year. Get the list of these classes at our Parks and Recreation webpage on our county website, and you can sign up there as well. We will hook you up. There's the Fallsburg School High School pool. It's an indoor pool where we can train for lifeguarding. So encourage people to do that.
And before we go, nice note, a new citizen sworn in this past Wednesday.
Yes. Yeah, it's a post that went viral. We have had close to 50,000 people view it.
Wow.
It's been shared hundreds of times. It's been liked almost 1,000 times, and I'm usually happy to get 30 or 40 likes on things that I post on Facebook because, you know, it's government, and I try to put things up there that are interesting, but sometimes people don't pay attention. Well, they really paid attention to this. 16 new citizens sworn in by County Clerk Russell Reeves at a naturalization ceremony on Wednesday. It brought people across all aisles together. We're talking about this at the national level, of course, about immigration, but everybody can agree these folks were worthy of being celebrated. Some had worked on this for years, and now they're joining us, and most of them are going to be right alongside us in Sullivan County if they haven't been already. In fact, a lot of people, the comments that I received was like, hey, I know them.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And now they are full-fledged American citizens. Congratulations to them.
And congratulations to you for putting that up there. You can check it out at the Sullivan County Government Facebook page. Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government will talk to you next Friday. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll meet the new town supervisor in the town of Colchester in Delaware County. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on Science Friday, it's been an especially bad flu season with more than 19 million cases in the U.S. Why so bad and why did the flu shot whiff this year? Plus, in honor of the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show this weekend, a look at the muddy history of dog domestication. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Hey, I'm Kimberly Izar, host of Farming Country. So I have some good news. There is still time to see the migrating bald eagles this winter. This week, Rosie Starr sits down with Don Hamilton, retired National Park Service resource manager, about what draws eagles to the Upper Delaware River.
I've always thought it was quite amazing how far some of these birds come from to this important wintering habitat we have here.
That's this week on Farming Country, Saturday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The town of Colchester in Delaware County borders Sullivan County and includes the hamlets of Cooks Falls, Downsville, and the Papacton Reservoir, part of the New York City water system. Voters in the town of Colchester elected a new town supervisor last November, and he's now a few months into the job. Rob Haffel is holding a series of in-person town hall sessions to hear directly from residents, and he joins us now to talk about those upcoming meetings, what he's hearing from residents, and what's on his agenda for Colchester. Mr. Haffel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you're, as I said, a few months into the job, just elected in November as Colchester's new town supervisor. Let me just ask you, what surprised you most so far?
Well, actually, I took office on January 1st. So it's only been
one
month, but
right, 1 month. Sorry.
the thing that surprised me the most is, I guess, policies and procedures, and you know, getting a base foundation underneath you. We do a lot of things right, but we're trying to develop the policies and procedures to, go with what we're doing.
And when you talk to residents, what concerns or questions are coming up most often for you there?
Well, you know, your average person wants to make sure that their water flows when they turn on the tap, or that their roads are plowed correctly during a snowstorm. And, you know, that's the simple stuff. And of course they don't, you know, they want to keep their taxes as low as possible. So, you know, fiscal management is, you know, I'm only a board member, and I have a bunch of different duties as the supervisor. So all five of us board members are tasked with, you know, taxpayer money, overseeing. And, we take that very seriously. The snowstorm that we just had this last weekend, our highway department, you know, prove their value, as well as in other communities also.
Yeah, absolutely. You're seeing it firsthand.
Yes.
And you're also holding, as I said, a series of town halls, town meetings. You've got one coming up in Cooks Falls. Why was that important for you to start this way of communicating with residents when you just start your term?
Well, it's important that, you know, I've been holding frequent and posted office hours here at the town hall in Downsville, but I've also decided to hold office hours in Cooks Falls. We have a highway department and justice court building in Cooks Falls. So actually this afternoon from 12 to 2, I'll be in Cooks Falls, and any citizen can walk in and see their town supervisor and ask questions. We're also implementing, we're starting slow, 4 times a year. We have 24 town board meetings a year, 2 each month. And the first board meeting in the month of February, May, August, and November, we're holding it in Cooks Falls so that those people, the citizens that live over there, don't have to drive over a mountain. There's a mountain in between the two hamlets. We're coming to them. They don't have to come to us. And I think that's a positive thing to show, hey, your town government cares. We're coming to you.
And the way it works in Delaware County as town supervisor, you also sit on the Delaware County Board of Supervisors. And how does that role shape your work at the town level, do you think, even though you've only been doing it for a month?
Well, I've been involved. I've been coming to our local town board meetings for 5 years. I've been on the Colchester Planning Board, and I've been attending the Delaware County Board of Supervisors meetings for the last year. Yes, I've had my second meeting so far in Delhi, and I'm serving on two committees. Each of the supervisors is assigned committee work to work on. So I'll be on the Economic Development Committee and the Shared Services Committee. And that takes, you know, it takes a portion of your time, but it's part of their job.
So 30 days in or so, you're settling into the job. What are you most focused on? Are you focused on building, you know, relationships, policies, other things? What are you sort of focusing and honing in on?
Well, we've had longstanding, at the town board level, we've had longstanding committees, cemeteries and parks, or swimming pool, law enforcement. Colchester is the only town in Delaware County that has a townwide police agency. So these committees have been revived, and each committee is two board members, and it gives them the responsibility of being more involved in the day-to-day operations of the town. And the town board members have really enjoyed the committee work in this first month, and it's a busy time for them.
For listeners who may not know much about the town of Colchester, you know, it's described as the cornerstone of the Catskills. How would you describe it? What would you want folks to know about the town of Colchester who, if they've never been there?
You have to come and visit and live here. It's a beautiful place. You know, we do have the Papakan Reservoir. We have the East Branch of the Delaware River. We are in the Catskill Park. Well, most of us are in the Catskill Park. And for those in Sullivan County, when you get off in Roscoe or you're only 2 miles away from being in the town of Colchester. It's that close. And like I said, the hamlet of Cooks Falls is close to Roscoe. Downsville is a ways away. But we're really excited if I can talk about America 250.
Please do. Yeah. Yeah.
So most people might know the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence is being around the country celebrated as America 250. The town of Colchester is one of only two areas in what is now Delaware County to have had a Revolutionary War battle. Mm. On September 9th, 1778, the Downs Brook battle was fought here on what's now Knox Avenue in Townsville. And for the America 250 celebration this summer, we are actually, our historical society is doing a water festival on June 13th, and we're using that as our America 250 focus. We're going to have a Revolutionary War battle reenactment with the participants of that reenactment actually camping out and hopefully opening up their encampment for school children to come and visit and see what that would have looked like at the time period. So we're really excited about America 250 because we do have that Revolutionary War battle in our township.
If folks want to come to the town hall or town board meetings, where can they get more information? And for folks that might be feeling like a little disconnected from local government, why would you encourage them to go?
Well, I'm going to say this as a citizen, more as an elected official. If you don't vote, you don't have the right to complain. And if you don't come to your town government meetings and participate or volunteer or anything, you're really doing yourself a disservice. So be a participant. Come out and learn about your community and help. That's my suggestion. Just, come out and find out what's going on.
That's Rob Haffel. He's the new town supervisor in the town of Colchester. You can find more information about the town of Colchester and the supervisor's corner there at the website, colchesterny.gov. Mr. Haffel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a preview of the latest episode of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. Tom Candela is here next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Vintage House, selling vintage clothing, records, books, and toys from the past.
a walk back in time on Main Street in Jeffersonville, and at VintageHouseJville.com. And from listeners like you.
This week on Cat's Cast, a conversation with legendary forest historian Dr. Michael Kudish.
And I opened up the first set of radiocarbon dates, and I thought 500, maybe 1,000 if I'm lucky. And my mouth opened up, and I was silent probably for 10 minutes, and the faculty going in and out, "Mike, what's the matter with you?" I said, "Well, one of them's over 5,000 years.
Saturday at 11 a.m., right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, we get to hear from Tom Candela, host and producer of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. Why? Because the new episode of Curtain Call drops every
today.
Friday. We like saying that because it sounds like we're cool and young.
Yes, it is.
It drops today. It's at WJFFradio.org. Tom's here to give us a preview. Who are you talking to today?
Yeah, so today on the show, I have playwright Nika Ray and director Joe Bautista. They are the creatives of a new play called The Cry of the Butterfly, which is going to open next week at the Theater for the New City. In New York City. Now, Nika, she is the daughter of the famous director Nika Ray. He directed Rebel Without a Cause, that movie.
Wow.
Many people of our age will remember that, and then some. So the play is basically rooted in her family history, particularly her mom, Nika's mom, Betty Ute, who was a dancer back in that day as well, back in the Hollywood studio days. And so we talk a lot about, you know, her personal stories of what that shaped this new play. It's sort of autobiographical. It's really an interesting piece.
Great. This is a preview of Curtain Call's new episode. The full episode is available at WJFFradio.org today, but let's get a preview from Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. My guests today are playwright Nika Ray and director Joe Bautista. Now, Nika is the writer of a new play called The Cry of the Butterfly. Now, while Nika is the daughter of a legendary filmmaker, his name is Nicholas Ray, the play looks beyond his fame, focusing instead on the unseen labor and emotional care that hold families together. And joining her on the show is Joe Bautista. He is the director of The Cry of the Butterfly, a longtime off-Broadway artist, artistic director of the historic 13th Street Repertory Theater, and a multidisciplinary creative person who works spans theater, film, photography, and music. Nika, Joe, I want to welcome you both to Curtain Call.
Well, thank you for
having us.
Yes, yeah. My pleasure. And Nika, I'm going to start the questions or the conversation off with you. What drew you to the stage at this point in your career?
Well, I wanted to write about my mom. Mm-hmm. And what happens in the play is her daughters come for her birthday, and during the course of their visit, they learn that their mother is sick. Through this, they discuss what it was like growing up the daughters of these iconic parents and exactly what their mother brought and gave to them. And I just felt like theater was the most intimate way to show this family dynamic. And it's the way the story came to me. The story came to me as a play, mm-hmm. not as a memoir, but as a play.
Okay, so it's an autobiographical play, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And Joe, exactly. What brought you to this particular piece? What was it about Cry of the Butterfly that brought you to it or made you want to direct it?
Well, I'll tell you, Tom, the first time that I spoke to Nika about this, I was thrilled with an idea, a basic idea that we all live with, and it's about being a human being, no matter who you are. You could be an emperor, you could be a painter, a sculptor, a doctor. It just doesn't matter. And the most important thing is the relationship between human beings. And with Nicholas Ray, what he gave us was incredible. But what I found out by talking to Nika and looking at the story is that human beings trying to be one is still the toughest thing in the universe.
And you found that this play explores that theme thematically?
Absolutely. It's absolutely the greatest art form in the world is trying to be a person. And most people have trouble with it their entire lives.
How did you meet Nika? Was it some by reading
some
of her other
work? Well, actually, I do a lot of work downtown. And I do work in Maine, Canada, and at my theater for years. And then what happened was Nika was coming to the shows, which was wonderful. And I appreciated Nika being there. And she saw the type of work that I do. And I think that's what gravitated her towards me. She saw that maybe I would be the guy to handle it.
I see.
So when she mentioned to me the dynamic, I mean, she has a beautiful sister named Julie. And there's her, who's Nika, is beautiful herself. Nika's got a generous heart. She is so engaging. Nika is authentic and spontaneous. And for me, it's everything. When I see that in a person, I gravitate towards that, which means I'm going to get a lot of truth from her. And she's extremely truthful. She's extremely authentic. When I read the script, I saw it in there. And I said, what we need to do is we need to add a performance value to it. We need to craft it. We need to have a beginning, a middle, and an ending. And that's what we did. We looked at the beginning. We looked at the middle. We looked at the truth. And when it's really there and you feel it, it becomes super powerful. And that's what I saw we could do with the play.
So it sounds like the two of you sort of cooperated on the development of the play itself. Nika, you mentioned that you had a rough draft initially when you approached Joe. So was the process that you rewrote this together to form that theatrical arc that you're talking about, Joe?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely collaborative.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did that go for you, Nika, as a writer, allowing other people to come in?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love the collaborative process. And also, this being my first play, what Joe gave me was like a class in playwriting, how you make a story theatrical, how you keep the beats and the rhythm. A play can be internal. And he showed me and shows me how to do that. And I just felt like all his years of experience, he was really generous in sharing with me. Yeah.
And how much were the actors involved in bringing that sort of almost like a devised theater, right, Joe, from the ground up that it sounds like you were creating?
Yeah, absolutely. This. Well, I'm glad you asked that question. When you create a play, the first engine is you realize that I have to like it, which is the writer. And then, okay, I'm going to give it to you, the director. What do you think? And then the director has to find the right people to do it. And then you look at an actor, and if you're worth your salt in any way, whether you're a writer or a director, all of them are important. And that's the actors. You respect them. You really go out of your way to find people. And we've got a tremendous cast.
That's
charismatic, beautiful to look at, beautiful to listen to, experience in film and television. These are the people. So you hand it to them, and you sit back and you would say, wow, I can't believe this. You see that what they do and the way they interpret it, that's the process. And that's really the way it works. And if you're lucky, you get everything you want. And that's where we're at right now. We've got that going on. It's about trust. And you give them a lot of line. If it's too much line, you reel it back in. It's too long and it's not making sense. You trim it back so it feels real. That's exactly what the process is.
Right, right. And so it sounds like you are allowing your actors to have some freedom there with
absolutely
with how they help you develop this piece.
We are the most developmental place that exists, and we are downtown, which is even the birthplace of experimental. So that's why we live for these moments. This is what we're really good at, because you can take off the handcuffs and you could say, can I do it this way 20 different ways, and we'll just go from this direction. That's the joy of doing really original work.
Well, it's a very exciting time for all of you to be bringing a new piece to the New York stages and developing it from the ground up. How much are you involved, Nika, in this process? Are you going to rehearsals and with your paper and pen and taking notes and writing, rewriting scenes? Is that part of the process?
I'm going to rehearsals and I am making changes. I've listened to the actors. If they feel like they don't need to say everything that I've written, like, go for it. Let's cut. Let's streamline it. Let's make it move. We have, like Joe said, we have some great actors. They're all just fantastic. We got so lucky. I listened to them and we're like, okay, let's cut that. That's not working. So I'm really a part of it. Nothing is etched in stone. And everyone is so respectful of me, too. And I just, I just welcome the collaborative. The audience is going to be part of that conversation too.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. That was part of my next question, is because really the audience is another, sometimes another character in the show itself, but in this case could be very well part of the developmental process.
That's what we live for. That is our engine. In this show, actually, there are moments when the actors engage with the audience and they deliver things to the audience. There are moments where the whole place feels like it's one room in a house or an apartment, or it becomes a movie set. So the barometer for the actors and for me, I am telling you, with an audience, you can feel the energy in real time. Wow. Nothing has to be said. And you know that if they're with you, they're against you, or they get it. And that's exactly what we're going through. On the 15th of February, we'll be having a talk back after the show.
Great.
It's extremely rewarding. The audiences always love it. They have a million questions. And in theater, you don't have a lot of chances for that. People get up and leave and they say, boy, I wish I could have asked a question about this.
Yeah.
And especially with this subject matter, because we're dealing with a legend. And there's questions to ask, right? So that's the way I'm engineering the show, which brings the audience in as part of the show. So I'm totally on board with that. I love the energy of an audience. They deserve a lot. I almost think of them as part of the cast.
Nico, you did write a memoir, Ray by Ray, and this was basically your father's story. Now, this play is more, it kind of shifts to from your father's story to more of your mother's story. What made you think that we needed to hear her voice?
My mother was a spectacular human being. She just wanted to dance. But my father convinced her to have children, and she had my sister and I. And lo and behold, my father and her divorced, and he never helped raise us, didn't help with child support. My mother, who had been a dancer all her life, had no skills, had not graduated high school, didn't want to continue in the movies after she left my father. And she went to a secretarial school and learned how to type so she could get a job that would be stable to bring my sister and I up as a single mother. So she just was really strong. And so I really wanted to tell her story, and I wanted to tell our story and the dynamic between my mother and my sister and I. And just, I wanted to show just what a special human being my mother was. Really, what a spectacular human being. What a different type of person Betty Ute was.
Okay, and let's talk now about when the show is playing, how people can get tickets. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, the best thing to do is, if you want tickets, if you go to the Theater for the New City website, you will see the poster. It is on Ovation Tickets, and it'll be 12 performances. It'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m. It'll be Sunday at 3. It opens up on February 5th, and it closes on the 22nd.
And thanks to Tom Candela for that preview of the full episode of Curtain Call, which is online at wjffradio.org. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. We'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend and stay warm.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Adam Burke sympathized with the astronaut who said her husband is always calling her in space to find out where things are.
Honey, the Tupperware goes in the top drawer. It's not rocket science, and I should know.
I'm Peter Sagal. You can find this week's news quiz exactly where you left it, but this time with special guest John Chu, the director of Wicked. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. a cold weather advisory remains in effect until 9 a.m. Sunday. Very cold wind chills as low as 15 to 25 below are expected. Those dangerously cold wind chills could cause frostbite on exposed skin in as little as 30 minutes. So if you have to go outside, use caution, wear appropriate clothing, and keep your pets indoors as much as possible. Today's high only 9, negative 8 tonight. Tomorrow, high of 17, 18 for Saturday. We might see some sun, but it's getting windier on Sunday. And again, temperatures at night, negative 5 Saturday, 0 Sunday, up to 26 on Monday.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.